Thank you very much. Merci, bonjour. Mi bibi, awadi jamna. The multiple languages in which my research is conducted don't really feature in this talk, but they could. I'm happy to answer questions in any of the languages I speak. What I'm trying to do today is to give you a sense, a taster of research that is currently underway that I've been doing for about the last 10 years. So it's a real world example of doing digital research and the challenges that this throws up. I will give you a little bit of theory, but only a very little bit. There is theory out there, and I could endlessly talk about that. I prefer to endlessly talk about the photographs I'm about to start showing you. And I'm going to end up with some gestures towards art history, because I know there are some art historians out there. What I will do, though, here's a bit of shameless self-promotion about archives, but also I'm an absolute fan of Stephen Polyakov and his drama series Shooting the Past in terms of representation of the reality of messy archives. Shooting the Past is it. So that's background. What other bits of background do I need to give you? I should say I'm a social anthropologist and that I have been working in the West African state of Cameroon for, man and boy, more than 30 years, going there every year. A variety of projects, which is why I speak a few languages. And the one I'm talking about today is in West Cameroon in Bouda, which is marked between Bafoussam and Bamenda. It primarily concerns the work of Jacques Toussellet. It's the spelling of his name is itself a nightmare. All variants are attested, and at various times I have added to the confusion by typing it in different ways. This spelling is what is written on his identity card, so that's what I am trying to use. One of his children uses an I instead of the middle E, so it gets confusing. This photograph, self-portrait, taken in the early 60s, when, as you can see, he was using tripod camera, and still using glass plates. So a lot of the technology that I'm dealing with has a direct connection to photographic technologies used in Europe late 19th century, early 20th century. So he started on glass negatives, then moved to plastic negatives, and most of the photographs I'm going to be showing you today were actually taken on medium format 120 film, so it's 6x6 centimeters, that size. And again, I can talk endlessly about the technicalities, and I will try not to. That's how he looked as a young man. How many times do I need to click? There he is a few years ago with a visitor. So the reason I got involved with Jacques Toussellet is that I met one of his pupils, Joseph Chila. Again, shown as a young man. I don't know if you can see, but there it says his bag was Photo Playboy. And these flared trousers, of course, are very distinctive of the 1970s. And there's a whole, I think I mentioned this in passing, but there is a wonderful project about fashion in these photographs. Chila was one of the two photographers who worked as a photographer 200 kilometers north of Buda, which is where I have primarily worked. I got talking to him. He hadn't kept any old negatives. He told me that his patron, the man who taught him photography, had kept them. And so he introduced me to Tousselet Jacques. And then I got a grant from the British Library to do scanning of the negatives to create a digital archive. And that's really the important background to this project. I am, I think, obsessed. And I'll try and give you, and I'll try and explain why. But I'll just give you a taster of why. Every time I look at samples, I find new things. But first of all, why the project was urgent, why it needed to be done. Well, there's lots of reasons, but these are some of them. In some cases, the negatives were disintegrating. In others, the negatives had disintegrated, although, as you can see, there is still something that can be extracted. There's not only negatives in this archive, there are also some prints, but not many. Unfortunately, prints are good termite food. In terms of satisfying the rubric, an endangered archive, this was one. The negatives were all in boxes against wall under a leaking roof. They are at least now all in protective sleeving and stored in tin trunks, which give them some protection. I should point out that the negatives are still in Cameroon, are still with Jacques, and the licensing is that he retains commercial rights, which is why this talk is not being filmed, but they are licensed freely for academic, non-commercial use. So, why am I obsessed? The bread and butter of the work of these photographers was identity cards. Photographs for identity cards, think passport photographs. You can tell stylistically what is an identity card photograph because people aren't wearing hats or headscarves. So here is one. And because they were being printed very tight, passport size, they didn't really care about the background. So you've got this weird elbow. And there are all sorts of things, and I should show you actually, that is how it would have been printed. There are various things that are then going on, as well as the stuff in the background. One thing is simply that because these were done for identity cards, that kept the price down. So there are all sorts of other photographs because people could afford it. But just kind of carrying on with this photograph, what is extraordinary, granted its medium format, is how good the, what quality the negatives are. And granted that the scanning took place, more than 5 years ago now, they could have been done at higher quality, although there are all sorts of technical reasons why they were done at the quality they were. But even then, what you can just make out reflected in the pupil of her eye is the reflection of the photographer. So for the art historians there, I think immediately of the Marriage of the Arnolfinis. And here, and I like seeing, oh God, I'm going the wrong way. I like seeing that as a self-portrait of the photographer. It changes things. And then, I mean, just to give you an idea of the surprises, what's going on with her eye infection? I don't know. I should say there is no documentation to these photographs. Some photographers kept meticulous records. The reason that I, to kind of, why am I here? The reason that I need face recognition, I've started using face recognition and other technologies, is to try and put order into what is basically a collection of, count them, 46,000 images. And that's counting these two as one. There aren't that many doubled photographs, but there are a few. And then you get into, again, clearly a passport photograph because he's not wearing a hat, but look at the guy at the back. And also, you can see hanging up to dry examples of the work. And I haven't yet managed to track down, match one of those prints with one of the negatives, but I do live in hope. I have tried blowing them up and they end up not being quite good enough to do face recognition on. Again, this is why I now grumble with myself for making the choices I made. So that's that. I've written a paper about images like that, and I'm not going to say more, but I'm very happy to take questions on it. And there's all sorts of stories. And then, again, nice. And so most of the images I've shown you so far were taken in the studio, which opened in 1972 when electricity arrived. But he also went to people's houses and to markets on the outlying villages. And what I like about this is the hands holding the blanket in place. And I mean, as an anthropologist, I can read the iconography here, and I'll give you some more examples of the iconography. But I mean, the horn, I don't know if you can see, he's got a drinking horn there, which is a sign of rank. And that is how it would have been printed. Fine. Then another photograph from the studio. Again, these fly whisks. The Pitt Rivers Museum have got examples of them. And sign of rank. Sign of rank not only for men, but also for women. And again, anyone from Cameroon would say, aha, of course, this is a mother of twins. And because the two gourds of palm wine. So you can see ways in which the images connect to the anthropology connects to the images. The cloth itself is a sign of a wealthy senior family. And again, there are examples of these cloths in the Pitt Rivers. Again, to kind of think about technical ways of approaching it, you see these cloths in the background of a fair set of the photographs. I've been wondering about just doing pattern matching because each cloth is identical. So far, I haven't had any successes, but there's still hope. And then I said that the price was low, so anyone could get them. Well, even a street seller popped into the studio to get his photograph taken. I've alluded to it, but just for the record, these photographs were taken in effect between 1970 and 1985. There are other photographs taken for other purposes. This is one of the few where there are some ethical issues. This is one photograph of a pair, and I'm only going to show the view from the back. And you can see this is actually taken as part of medical documentation. Actually, there are a series about registering for disability. But by and large, there aren't ethical problems with these. When I started, I should say, I was worried that I would find pornographic images, and I didn't. Well, there's one, which is a literal photocopy of a bit of European pornography. Which I'm not showing you. There are also kind of Cutesville, so two twins and younger siblings, and then loads and loads of groups of friends. And again, there's a, I am thinking about posing and that sort of iconography. There are examples of, I've already alluded to this, literal photocopies, because there's no documentation. When someone came back to the photographer and said, I want another print, it was most of the time easier to take the print, re-photograph it, and print from that, than scramble through these boxes saying, is it that, is it that? No. Which is quite nice for me working on the archive, because in some cases I can match the two and discover how the original was printed. And I think I've got an example of that later on. But then we have high texture. Let me put it like that. And again, I mean, this could be Sidu Keita. And I'll come back to this photograph later, but let me just point out, she is the wife of a chief, and you can tell that because there's a leopard skin behind her, and more of that cloth. This cloth, by the way, is blue and white. And then here's one of the people I've been able to identify, because I've talked to old missionaries, and again, I mean, this is as much about me as it is about the archive, but I am very satisfied to know by zooming in on his watch that this photograph was taken at 11:35 a.m. It is some, I don't know which year, but it's somehow very satisfying in terms of extracting something out of an archive, that sort of thing is possible. And then you get the bits which are seriously damaged. Now, there is a kind of, this is a photograph which this negative wasn't scanned the first time round because the person doing the scanning said it was too damaged. And very late in the process, I discovered that the people doing the scanning had rejected a whole lot without discussing. So I've ended up scanning them myself. And I think there is a wonderful, there's an aesthetic, let me put it like that, of getting images out of damage, which might be a very particular Western aesthetic, but there's a few thousand examples like this. And then there is stuff which are completely illegible, but thanks to simple things like the levels command, you can extract some basic information. And that's a medal giving, I think, an investiture. So, I've already given you the outline number, but 46,540 plus all the badly damaged ones. So, well, I have looked at every single one. I don't imagine anyone else ever will. To deal with this really is a big data issue, and as such, I think the problems I have are generalizable, and I would remind you that the photographic industry has been processing millions of photographs a year since the early years of the 20th century. So these sorts of problems are not exclusive to the digital revolution. Okay, the number of photographs being taken has increased by many orders of magnitude, but even dealing with analog photography, there's a big issue. And I should say that the move from analog photography to digital, me in Cameroon and large bits of Africa, probably means that in 50 years' time there will be less photographic evidence than there is now of 50 years ago, because it's none of it's being archived. And the photographers, the current photographers, the equivalent of Jacques Tousselet, when their memory cards are full, they wipe them and start again. So my successor in a couple of generations won't have anything to work on. But that's, again, a different talk. So I want to now start thinking about different ways of working through archives like this. I've mentioned the couples and that I'm omitting them, so I'm just going to give you two, and then I'm going to list a few others. So, photographer is trickster. This is a fun one. Here is a photograph that used to be, that's just from the archive. This is a pair of, this is from actual print, a Cameroonian policeman. Here is another Cameroonian policeman, also scanned. This one is actually my copy photograph. And now here's the twist. This photograph, the one you're looking at now, unlike its predecessor, this one was on display as a sample in the studio. And it actually isn't of a Cameroonian policeman. It's the photographer dressed up as a policeman. And he was very pleased, is very pleased, and says occasionally that that policemen would complain about him masquerading as a policeman. And then other examples. Here is a couple having fun in the studio, posing as an affectionate couple. Here is another couple in a very, very similar pose. This one was also on display in the studio, and this is equally confusing because that's the photographer again. He's a bit like Hitchcock, who always featured in his films, and she wanted a photograph of herself with a boyfriend, no boyfriend available, so he nobly steps into the breach. And here's another example of the two of them. And apparently he got into trouble with one of his wives because of all these photographs, but that's, again, a different story. And then there's yet another example, and again, one of the damages, example of the damage. The most celebrated example of kind of damage being kind of lauded in art history or in photography is the New Orleans photographer Belloc, and in some cases the appearance is a bit reminiscent of that. But anyway, so what else can one do? There is, I've already shown you her. Well, I have now found her and her husband. And I've mentioned that the negatives were stored in little boxes, the boxes in which photographic paper were stored. There are actually four images which are clearly from the same session, and they have ended up scattered in two different boxes. So again, this gives you an idea of how negatives kind of from time to time move. And the other thing I should mention is that he is wearing a medal, so he has been given some medal for services to the state, and that's almost certainly why these photographs were taken. Right. So, thinking. Classic photograph. Classic sculpture. Rodin's Le Penseur, and then you get people doing this. This is from another photographer, just to demonstrate that these are not exclusive to Photo Jacques. But here is a photograph by Photo Jacques, and again, and again. And this is one of the, incidentally, this is one of the studio props. So to celebrate the new year, people would appear in this heart-shaped aperture. And yet again, and then from the village where I work, a very old friend of mine, as of April, he was still alive. He is now a very old man. We don't know the year, but you know, he's doing that. And then another, this one is by a pupil of Jacques. And I don't know if you can read it. It says Souvenir de Brigitte. And that one's by Samuel Finlack, another. So what does it mean? Well, it's tricky. So I've got, in the Toussaint archive, I've got 43 images. And there's bound to be more. It's just these are the ones I found. And they're split almost exactly, some with the right hand, some with the left hand. That may have been significant because they're very conscious of left hand and right hand distinctions. If you want to insult someone, you give them money with, or anything with your left hand. But in terms of the posing, and then, so I thought, well, you know, I'm an anthropologist, I will ask people. And I got nowhere, is the short version. These asking these questions is not very helpful, it turns out. It might have been. All I can do is try. But there is a link to the statuary, because there are statues like this, And what people say, and this does connect to the sort of thing that is said both about the statuary and about why people would pose like this in the photographs. The sort of thing people do say, and but in, as the results of my questionnaire sort of indicate, they are to an extent making it up to, not making it up, but they are constructing an account to satisfy me, perhaps, is that what this means is they are, there's two things. One is they are thinking of someone. The problem is that thinking in this sense, and especially in these cultural contexts, thinking of someone is deeply ambiguous. The concern is, are you thinking ill of someone? So when, I'm not going to jump back to the photographs, but when you are doing that, you might do that and give it to a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and then they say, it means that I'm thinking of this person, and that's all well. But if you are just with your friends and you're doing that, and you might put it on your wall, there's a sense in which what you're doing is saying, I'm on the alert. I'm wary of anyone trying to harm me. And that is exactly what they say of these statues, that these were on display as protection. And so they were thinking about, in the sense of being alert and monitoring. So I can go from the accounts of the posing, and there's a whole lot more standard poses, to the art history. So that's all the my kind of, just to give you a sense of what the sorts of things I'm doing with the archive. Now I want to get a bit more technical. So I've done various collaborations. And not only just collaborations, I've just tried using various commercial face recognition software, which I'll mention at the end. One of the most successful is with the engineering department, and they are, I think they, various bits of this program are featuring in other parts of this summer school, because they've done work not only on face recognition in photographs and in film, but also on objects in the Ashmolean Museum. So I think they are featuring elsewhere. So here's one of my examples. And by putting it into their system, we can, I think you can see, I mean, the yellow boxes does, but that and that are the same man, and it was not at all obvious to me. And actually, it also threw up there where he's got more of a beard. But you can do other things with their system, and this is where they are particularly neat, that you don't need to only do face recognition, you can do straightforward pattern matching. So you can, I just drag the cursor and identify a chunk of the image, and then it finds matches. So you can do backdrops. Again, there's a doctoral student about to start a PhD on all these painted backdrops, and by identifying a boat and an island, you can identify all the photographs with the same backdrop, which is neat. And even here, just a tiny little bit is enough. And that is helpful because, again, in terms of putting some structure in the archive, having all the photographs of the same backdrop are probably taken approximately at the same time. And another example of this is Alfred Asongwe, who is there. He was Jacques' neighbor his shop. He was a radio repairman, and his shop was immediately next door to the studio. And so quite often Jacques would come back from visiting someone or a market and would have one photograph left in the roll. And so he would just take Asongwe. So his photo album has lots of studio photos, Jacques. And just so you can see, this is the rubber stamp that was put on the back. And there is also very conveniently a date. So my recent trips, I've been chasing people and going through their photo albums and looking at the reverse and almost saying, I don't care what's on the front, but I do. But getting the dates has been really helpful. And so you think, well, face recognition, nice studio. I mean, it's very clearly in Jack's studio because of the studio, the backdrop. You think face recognition should do it, but it didn't work. But what did work were the trousers. Nice Czech trousers, and that identified the original negative. So that is how it was and how I showed it to you. Was how it got printed. So that's one of these places where I can begin to see how in the dark room these negatives were treated. Let me put it like that. There are some alternatives that I've tried. Photo Bounce is one where I've done all right, but not brilliantly. It's something about, it's a scaling thing, I think, more than anything. Their recommendation is that you don't use it for more than 20,000, and so here I am putting in 46,000. So it kind of struggles, and there are sliders which adjust. I'm not going to show you. I'm just mentioning it. There are sliders which adjust how narrowly they are matching the faces, and I go very quickly from no matches to hundreds of matches, and finding the right calibration point I have found hard. But at one level I don't mind that too much, because even though I'm not getting many matches, it is showing me images that I otherwise wouldn't have seen, and so it's introducing some new paths. Then there is Zegami, which I'm going to end by demonstrating live, which is very brave of me. The problem with Zegami is that it doesn't yet do face recognition, but the exciting news is that they are now talking to the people in the engineering department, which is this thing at the back. Visor is one of their names for their system. So the sort of system that I have just demoed, the moving from face recognition to pattern recognition and back, will come into Zegami in a year or so. So I'm very optimistic that is going to be a very neat system. So before I go into that and break the internet or something, let me just allude to other things, other projects that are possible, that having created this archive. Oh, and I should say, I completely omitted to say, all these images are online via the British Library. And I will show you the URL later on. I have mentioned this already. Fashion styles, textiles. I've started doing work on 1970s copies of Paris Match and Vogue and things, because these were all circulating in Cameroon then. So there's definitely, several doctorates worth of stuff on fashion. Again, I've mentioned material culture, the props, the fly whisks, the backgrounds, whole other view. And then patterns of connections. Who are in these groups? It's not simply families. There are a lot of families, but then, I showed you a group of five friends. Who are those friends? There's a set of ways in which one can start from those sorts of questions. And then poses. Well, I've already talked about the thinking pose. There are a variety of other ones. And this is nice because it is literally the presentation of self. And so we can go back to Irvin Goffman's work, and I would remind you, I suppose, that these are Cameroonians taking photographs of Cameroonians. So unlike much of the literature on photographs in former colonies, where there's a whole lot of stuff about the colonial gaze, it just doesn't apply to this material. And again, I have kind of alluded to connections to photo albums and how these things were printed. But there's something I haven't told you. Sorry, is anybody from Cameroon in the audience? No. Okay. So, what anyone from Cameroon would understand from the map at the beginning, the town where these photographs were taken, is that there was a mini, there was a guerrilla war started in 1955, part of the struggle for independence. Fine, similar things happening all over the world. One of the twists here is it did not stop at independence. For a whole range of complicated things to do with Cameroonian politics, the French army, who had been fighting a war against so-called terrorists in the 1950s, were invited by the Cameroon government to stay on, and the civil war carried on into the 1970s. So all these photographs have a social context of a mini civil war. And there is no trace of it whatsoever in this archive. And so my line is that in a regime, in a context of being very, very heavily policed, to have a wedding, to have a funeral, to be able to gather a group of friends was itself an achievement, and as an accomplishment of achievement, you wanted a record. So I think you can read the absence, and again, that goes back to a whole lot of theoretical literature about how to deal with archives.
One more click.
The main thing I want to stress is that by creating the archive, it's opened up all sorts of possible ways, as I've kind of alluded to, of possible future research. And I think, certainly in this case, if I hadn't been introduced to Jacques by Chilla Joseph, I wonder if the negatives would have survived, because he has now retired and left the studio. I know of at least one case of another photographer who had at least as many negatives, and I kind of met him and said, maybe we can do something at some point. He then died, and he hadn't reported our conversation to his family, and when I went back, and the studio had been closed and everything had been burnt. So, I know these sorts of things are old kind of tropes about rescue and how everything is disappearing, but in some cases this is literally the case. So there are some references. I'm trying to remember where. If you're looking for all this stuff on the British Library, I haven't put the URL, but EAP54 is the critical number, and then it's easy to find. And I will stop the presentation by showing you my ORCID number as a QR code, which I think is rather cool. So theoretically, you should be able to take a photograph of that and then find out all my publications. ORCID have started enabling this. I just think that's fun. Right, let me get out of that and actually try and do you a live demo. This is extremely foolhardy. So here is Zigami. Because they are based in Oxford, I've talked to them and they have loaded a mere 5,000 images into their system. And there are ways in, and you can reorder it. And I should say I am learning their system. But this was developed to deal with medical imagery. And they've realized that having developed something to work with medical imagery where you can select a particular, I don't know what it was originally, a particular bone problem, that the system would generalize, and so I can start filtering. Scope and content. I think, yeah, I think they have imported it with the wrong, I think they've got out of sync. Let me just select a few of these. And it's, and then I go into the grid. Yeah, so we are out of sync by one. I have a horrible feeling. This is the problem of doing demos. And then I'll have to remove those filters to get back to everything. But it is a very cool way in when you start, and you can, in the graphs, this is now just lumping it by the boxes in which they came. And it is slightly scary. Oh, now I've lost them completely. Hang on, what's going on? Let me go back to that, that's better. But you can begin to see, if I go back to, see, now we have identified a clutch of those double ones. So those are essentially older because of, this is where I have to get technical, because those were done in the tripod camera, they are quarter plates. And I think they are, and that's also a quarter plate. Man up a tree. And so, yeah, it's just at the moment, this is just a browsing interface, and the any filtering is done via the metadata, which has been generated by a team of people in the town. So at the moment, you can only search, as it were, via text. But this is what they are working with by talking to the people in engineering to try and add the face recognition and pattern matching aspects. And when that kind of, when you bring the two together, then that will be a seriously useful system. And so I think at that point, I'm going to stop and we can do questions. Thank you very much.